Okay, so let's get into this. We're going deep today on a 2006 Missouri Supreme Court case, State v. Forrest, and you've been kind enough to share some materials on it. What we really want to do is kind of like pull out the interesting legal stuff about like how appeals courts look at these death penalty cases, and you know what kind of power the trial court has to make decisions.
Yeah, and as law students, especially kind of understanding how closely these things are looked at is important.
Yeah.
And you might think, well, Forrest, that's like almost 20 years ago. Why are we looking at that? Well, it's a really good illustration of how an appeals court will just absolutely comb through what happened at the trial level,
Right.
especially when it's a death penalty case. The stakes just don't get higher than that. And it touches on all kinds of fundamental areas of the law that you're studying. Evidence,
Right.
how the prosecutor handles the case, jury instructions, and that big one at the end. Was this death penalty sentence, the right one?
Right. So it's not just some like theoretical exercise,
Exactly.
you know? What makes this case even more interesting is the fact that we're talking about a triple murder. This is a really, really horrific story.
Absolutely.
And I mean, just all these legal issues come up, right? About the evidence the jury got to see, how the prosecutor argued the case, even the instructions that were given to the jury. And then ultimately, you know, was the death penalty the right call here?
Yeah. It's like a textbook example, or I guess maybe an anti-textbook example of how these things can play out in real life
Yeah.
with really, really high stakes.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's start, I guess, with the facts. Right. It's a chilling story. So back in December of 2002, Earl Forrest had this interaction with a woman named Harriet Smith. And the deal was Forrest was going to connect Smith with a drug dealer. And in exchange for that, he was going to get a lawnmower and a mobile home. So they meet up, but things go bad, like really bad. And Forrest winds up shooting and killing not only Harriet Smith, but also a visitor who was there, a guy named Michael Wells. And then after that, he steals this lockbox from Smith's place. The lockbox, it turns out, had like a ton of meth in it. We're talking like $25,000 worth.
Oh, wow. So sadly, it doesn't even end there, right? The violence continues.
No, it doesn't. Forrest goes back home. And of course, law enforcement is looking for him. When they get to his place, well, it turns into this whole confrontation and shootout. Forrest ends up wounding Sheriff Bob Wofford, and he shoots and kills Deputy Sharon Joanne Barnes.
So three people dead because of all of this.
Yeah.
And of course, Forrest is now facing, you know, the most serious charges possible.
Exactly. So he's charged with three counts of first-degree murder for Smith, Wells, and Deputy Barnes. And go through this whole trial, jury finds him guilty, and they sentence him to death.
Wow.
So obviously, with the death penalty on the line and appeal to the Missouri Supreme Court, that was a certainty. And when it gets there, Forrest is raising all these objections.
Well,
I mean, a lot of objections, 13 in total.
13. So obviously, lots to argue about from the trial. We can't get to all of them, but let's at least hit some of the big ones, some of the issues that, you know, would be really important for law students to understand. So let's start with the evidence that the jury got to see.
Okay.
Like, what did they hear and what did they not hear?
Yeah, and one of the things that really jumps out is the trial court actually let the prosecution bring in evidence of Forrest's past,
Okay.
like his previous involvement with drugs and stuff. Now, you're learning about evidence,
Yeah.
and there are all these rules against character evidence. Like, you can't just say, hey, this guy did bad stuff before, so he must have done it again.
Yeah.
But Missouri has this thing, this doctrine called the complete story doctrine. And basically, what it means is, if the court thinks that the jury needs to hear about the past stuff to really get the full picture, to really understand what happened, they can let it in. So what you see in Forrest is that Missouri courts, they interpret this exception kind of broadly.
Okay.
They'll allow in evidence of these past bad acts when they think it's necessary to give the jury like the full context,
So it's like filling in those narrative gaps. Right.
Absolutely.
So the jury's not just seeing isolated pieces, but kind of the whole story.
Right.
So I guess this brings up a question, right? Like, what about hearsay?
Yeah.
Because wouldn't some of this past stuff involve, you know, people saying what they heard from others?
Yeah, you're right. And that's an important distinction in this case.
Yeah.
So normally, you can't just have people testifying about what someone else said unless it falls under one of the exceptions,
Right.
because that's hearsay. But what happened in Forrest is that the people testifying about these past drug incidents, they were actually on the stand under oath. And the defense lawyers, they had the chance to cross-examine them,
Okay.
to really grill them. about what they were saying. And that's what makes it okay, because the defense had the opportunity to challenge them right there in court.
Right. So because they could question these people directly, that's what makes this otherwise, you know, iffy evidence admissible.
Exactly.
Okay. So there was also another thing about evidence, right? The victim impact statements.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one.
Especially in the penalty phase.
Right. So Forrest is saying that these statements from the families about how the murders affected them, he's saying that it was too prejudicial.
Yeah.
That it would make the jury decide based on emotion and not the law.
Right, right.
But the Missouri Supreme Court, they pointed back to this U.S. Supreme Court case, Payne versus Tennessee.
Okay.
And in Payne, the court said victim impact statements are allowed. Okay. They're allowed during sentencing. Because the jury, they need to understand, like, the full harm that was caused by these crimes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so in Forrest's case, the court said, hey, look, the statements, they didn't go beyond what's allowed.
Okay.
They weren't unfairly prejudicial.
So they followed that precedent.
Right.
Okay. So we've talked about what evidence was allowed in. Now let's look at how the prosecution actually presented their case. Specifically, I'm thinking about this statement that the prosecutor made during closing argument.
Oh, yeah, yeah. During the penalty phase.
Right, in the penalty phase. Yeah. That got a lot of attention.
Right. Prosecutors, they always have to be careful with what they say.
Right.
Because if it's seen as inappropriate, it can be a problem.
Yeah.
And this is a prime example. Mm-hmm. So the prosecutor tells the jury, mercy is for the innocent.
And of course, the defense is not happy about this.
Right. They're arguing that this statement is just totally improper.
Yeah.
Because it's like saying to the jury, well, you already found him guilty, so you can't even think about being merciful.
Right. Like it shuts down any possibility of a lighter sentence.
Exactly. Like even if there are mitigating factors, mm-hmm. you know, maybe things in his past or circumstances of the crime.
Yeah.
That might make them think about giving him life in prison instead of death.
Right.
The prosecutor's basically saying, don't even consider that.
Right.
But the Missouri Supreme Court, they looked back at one of their own cases, Stavey's story, and they actually said that this statement was okay.
Really?
Yeah, and it comes down to context. They said the prosecutor was responding to the defense's arguments because the defense was going on and on about how Forrest should get mercy and leniency.
Okay.
So the court saw this as like a counterargument. The prosecutor saying, hey, hold on, you already found him guilty.
Right.
So the point here is that appeals courts, they don't just look at these statements in isolation.
Yeah.
They try to understand the whole back and forth.
The whole flow of the arguments. Right.
Exactly. And whether something was really unfair or prejudicial in that context.
Makes sense. Okay. So let's switch gears a bit and talk about the instructions that were given to the jury. Forrest had some issues with those as well, right?
He did. He challenged several of the instructions.
Okay.
But in the end, those challenges didn't go anywhere.
Why not?
Because Missouri, they have these things called Missouri Approved Instructions, or MAI.
Okay.
And they're these pre-written instructions that are supposed to accurately explain the law to the jury.
Okay.
On all sorts of different legal issues. And the courts, they basically give these MAI a lot of weight. They assume that they're correct.
Oh, I see.
So when Forrest wanted the court to give non-MAI instructions, they said no. They said the MAI instructions that they already gave covered everything.
So unless you can show that a specific MAI instruction is just plain wrong or doesn't apply to the facts of the case,
yeah,
it's going to be tough to win on appeal with that kind of argument.
Exactly.
So it's like they're trying to have some consistency right. With the way the law is explained to juries.
Yeah, it creates some predictability in the legal process.
Okay. So last but definitely not least, we have to talk about this thing called proportionality review. It's a huge deal in death penalty cases,
yeah,
right?
It is, absolutely. It's a safeguard, a check to make sure that the death penalty isn't being given out randomly or when it's just too harsh compared to other similar cases.
Okay.
So in Missouri, when the Supreme Court does this proportionality review, they're looking at three main things. First, they want to make sure that the jury didn't decide on the death penalty because they were, like, you know, emotional or biased,
right,
or prejudiced in some way. And with Forrest, they didn't see any signs of that.
Okay, good. And what's the second thing?
The second thing they look at is whether the aggravating factors, you know, the things that make a crime eligible for the death penalty.
Right.
They want to see if those were actually supported by the evidence from the trial.
Okay.
And remember, for the death penalty to be on the table, the jury has to find at least one of these aggravating factors.
Mm.
And they have to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mm. Right.
Well, in Forrest's case, the jury found several. Like, first off, there were multiple murders.
Yeah.
And second, he killed a law enforcement officer in the line of duty. Specifically, That falls under Missouri law, section 565.032.21.
Okay.
And then third, the murders of Smith and Wells. Those were done for money, like for some kind of financial gain.
Right.
So the court looked at all this and they said, yep, there's definitely enough evidence to back up what the jury found.
Okay. So that's two things down. What's the third part of this proportionality review?
The third part is where they compare the case to other cases.
Okay.
So they look at past cases in Missouri where the death penalty was given.
Okay.
And they want to see, okay, was this sentence out of line?
Okay.
Was it too extreme compared to what's happened in other cases?
So they're looking for consistency.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, one thing that was really controversial in Forrest's case was that the court allowed the prosecution to bring up these other alleged drug crimes.
Oh.
But here's the thing. Forrest hadn't actually been charged or convicted of these crimes.
Whoa. So this is like stuff he supposedly did, but it was never proven in court.
Exactly. Unadjudicated, they call it.
Okay.
And they were using this as like extra reasons to give him the death penalty. And this was all based on this case, State v. Johnson.
Okay.
Where the court said, you can consider this kind of evidence during sentencing.
But that doesn't seem right. I mean, how can you punish someone for something they haven't even been found guilty of?
Yeah, Forrest's lawyers, they argued that this totally violated his right to due process.
Right.
Like, you have the right to a fair trial before you can be punished. But the court, they stuck with that Johnson precedent.
Okay.
And this is one of those things that, like, still gets debated. Like, how much evidence should be allowed when you're deciding whether someone gets the death penalty? Especially when it's stuff they haven't even been convicted of.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
For
so this whole appeals process, it sounds like it's not easy to get a trial court's decision overturned. Like, what are some of the hurdles that someone like Earl Forrest would have to clear?
Oh, yeah. There are definitely some big hurdles. So let's say the defense didn't object to something during the trial, right?
Okay.
But then they get to the appeals court and they say, hey, that was wrong. Well, the appeals court is going to apply a much tougher standard, what they call plain error review.
Okay.
And under that standard, the defendant, they have to prove two things. One, that there was a clear and obvious mistake. And two, that the mistake led to a serious injustice, like a total miscarriage of justice.
Oh, wow. So they have to show that it really messed up the fairness of the trial.
Right.
Yeah.
If they can't show both of those things, the appeals court isn't even going to look at the issue.
So even if there were mistakes, if they weren't brought up at trial, it's basically too late.
Yeah, unless it was a really, really egregious error.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about those objections that were properly raised? Like, let's say the defense did everything right at the trial level.
Yeah.
Does the appeals court just get to second guess everything the trial court did?
Well, not exactly. They give trial courts what's called deference.
Yeah.
Basically, they respect the trial court's decisions.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to things like, you know, what evidence is allowed in or how the trial is run. Because the trial judge, they're right there in the courtroom. They're seeing everything firsthand.
They have that direct view. Right.
Exactly. So the appeals court, they're only going to overturn those decisions if the trial court really abused their discretion.
Okay.
And that's a pretty high bar.
So what does that mean, abuse their discretion?
It means the trial court's decision wasn't just wrong. It was like way off base.
Mm.
So unreasonable that it just seems unfair.
Like it shocks the conscience.
Exactly. And in Forrest's case, the Missouri Supreme Court basically said, look, you haven't shown us that there were any major errors. And even if there were, you haven't shown us that they actually affected the outcome of your trial.
So he lost his appeal.
Yeah.
So for all you future lawyers out there, State v. Forrest, it's a real deep dive into how appeals work, especially with the death penalty. We've talked about the rules of evidence, the standards for jury instructions, this whole idea of proportionality review.
Yeah.
And it shows you how carefully the courts look at all these things.
Yeah, it really underscores the importance of procedure,
yes,
right? Like understanding the rules and the steps, making sure everything is done properly at the trial level, because if it's not, it can be really hard to fix things on appeal.
Right. Those early stages, they set the foundation for everything that follows.
Exactly. And this case, I think it poses a really interesting question.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, as you guys move through law school and eventually become lawyers,
yeah,
it's something to think about.
Okay. What's that?
So when you have a death penalty case,
yeah,
right, where the stakes are as high as they get,
yeah,
how much deference should an appeals court give to the trial court's decisions?
Okay.
On the one hand, you want to make sure that the trial was fair.
Right.
That the defendant's rights were protected.
Right.
But on the other hand, you also have to have some finality. Okay. You can't just keep appealing forever.
Right. There has to be some point where it's over.
Exactly.
Mm.
So how do you strike that balance?
It's a tough question, but an important one.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that about wraps up our deep dive into State v. Forrest. It's a fascinating case with a lot of really complicated issues. We've just scratched the surface here. But hopefully this has given you a better understanding of the appellate process, especially in these high-stakes capital cases. And maybe it sparks some interest for you to go and explore these issues even further on your own.
Yeah, there's a lot more to unpack there for sure.
Thanks for listening, everyone.